Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Back, it's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and I'm glad you're here. David Nassau is with us, ladies and gentlemen. He's a new friend. David is the author of the best-selling book, The Chief, The Life of William Randolph Hearst. He's the winner of the Bancroft Prize for History. He has many other credentials that would impress the heck out of you if we had more time, but those are pretty good ones. He's also Distinguished Professor of History and Director of the Humanities at the City University of New York Graduate Center. He's also the author of the New York Times bestseller, Andrew Carnegie. And it's a book all about that, the empire builder, the 19th century and part of the 20th century empire builder, Mr. Carnegie, I guess is a proper pronunciation. And he's here to talk to us about this famous guy. David, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
It's good to have you here. Congratulations on all your literary success. The book Andrew Carnegie was published in hardback in 06, and it's now out, I think, today in paperback.
Right. As we speak, it's sailing into the bookstore.
Congratulations. David, many of us hear the word Carnegie. We probably pronounce it wrong. I think most people pronounce it Carnegie, but right. I guess he pronounced it Carnegie. Anyway,
yeah, he was a Scotsman,
yep.
So the Scottish pronunciation is Carnegie. New Yorkers always add their own pronunciation to anything.
And of course.
Carnegie Hall was built, it became Carnegie Hall,
right.
And that pronunciation is stuck. But the man called himself Carnegie.
Yeah. All right. Well, we don't want to come back and haunt us, so we'll say his name correctly on this show, David.
Okay.
Most people know that name. That's a name, as you say, Carnegie Hall. I've been to Carnegie Hall and the Carnegie Mellon Foundation and all that. We know about his origins in Pittsburgh and all that. But basically, the average person on the street couldn't tell you why Andrew Carnegie is famous. Tell us why.
He's famous because two reasons. I'll give you two reasons. One, he was the richest man in the world in about 1900, and it was J.P. Morgan who said that. He proclaimed him the richest man in the world, and then he set forth to give away every penny that he had. He had already taken care of his wife and his daughter, and he spent the last 20 years of his life giving away about $300 million, equivalent today to many, many tens of billions of dollars. So both because he made more money than anybody else, and second, because he gave away more money than anybody else, this man has entered, you know, our history in a very big way.
Well, let's talk about how he made that money. Now, he was born in Scotland.
He's born in Scotland.
And he immigrated
to the
United States as a teenager.
With his mother and father, who was 13 years old. He had watched as his father and all his father's friends, who had been linen weavers in Scotland, were thrown out of business. He understood that capitalism was nothing if not dynamic in Scotland and in the United States, and you had to keep two steps ahead of the curve. You could not, you know, if the year is 1880, you got to be thinking about 1888.
Right.
You got to live in two dimensions if you're going to be a businessman. You got to sell your goods in the present, and you got to figure out what kinds of goods you've got to design to sell in the future.
He made a lot of money and made it look easy. Is that how he did it, you think?
Absolutely.
Because he made money wherever he went. A lot of people think he was. They think of Carnegie and they think of the steel business. But you know, he was in many things besides the steel business, and virtually all of them were successful.
Well, not only that, but, you know, this guy goes into the steel business when nobody else was in steel.
But he'd already been in the iron business.
At the time when he goes into steel, everyone is producing iron, which is, a different form.
Right.
He understands that iron is not strong enough for the railroads, that the railroads are going to be bigger, the railroad cars are going to be bigger and bigger, and iron's not going to do it. So he goes into steel. He's in steel for about 20 years, producing almost only, railroad ties for the railroad. And then he understands that the market's saturated. The railroads are built. What's he going to do with the steel? Well, skyscrapers. The cities are being built. Mm-hmm. So he retools his plans to go into structural steel for skyscrapers, for bridges, for mass transit systems.
So basically,
who steps ahead of the game?
So basically, you know, as I'm reading through your book, and I'm trying to understand what was it this guy had that made him such a visionary, that made it seem so effortless in what he did. You pointed out in the book that he didn't after a number of years, for most of his life, he hardly worked a full day.
His philosophy, his management philosophy, was simple. You choose the best people you possibly can. You leave them alone, but you monitor their results.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't tell them how to do it, but you watch whether they do it.
Yeah.
And if they do a good job, you give them a piece of the business. He didn't believe in large salaries. He believed in making the best executives and his managers his partners, his junior partners. Tying them to the business, tying them to the business in such a way that they weren't going to leave. So, one, always look ahead, always look into the future. Two, get the best people you possibly can, and when they prove their worth, tie them to the business by making them partners.
Mm-hmm.
And three,
but he wasn't so benevolent to his workers, was he?
Not at all. No, he regarded. I think one of the reasons he leaves Pittsburgh really early. Pittsburgh is where all the steel mills are,
mm-hmm.
and he takes off and moves to New York. And I think the reason he did it is that he's a warm-hearted man who knows that he's going to be ruthless towards his workers, and he doesn't want to be around. He wants to delegate.
He doesn't want to live in the blue-collar part of the world. He wants to live in the elite part of the world.
Absolutely, and he doesn't want to walk the streets with the blue-collar workers when he's cutting their wages.
Right. Yeah. Stand by, David. David Nassau, ladies and gentlemen, is our guest. He's the author of Andrew Carnegie, the Life and Times of a Great American Empire, an empire builder, an American entrepreneurial success story. We're going to come back and talk a lot more about this story right after these messages, 20 after. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with us. Back is 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And my websites are smallbusinessadvocate.com. That's where you can find our show, which we do every weekday, as you know. And you can find that in the live simulcast. You can find it in the daily replay. You can find the individual interviews there available for podcasting if you like. Lots of stuff there. Thousands of past interviews that we've done, including all the way up from 99 all the way up to today. And, of course, you can find thousands of articles that I've written and my Brain Trust members have written. You can find the Brain Trust there, of course. You can subscribe to my free newsletter. Check out our blog. Lots of good stuff that will help you have the maximum opportunity to be successful. And, of course, we have our knowledge base, which is askjim.biz. And we've anticipated your questions, and we have answers waiting on you. David Nassau is our guest. He's our new friend, soon-to-be-old friend. He's the author of the book on the 19th and early 20th century American entrepreneur Andrew Carnegie. That's the title of the book, Andrew Carnegie, now out in paperback today. David, you want to give us a website?
Well, the best way to get it is through any of the best way to get it is through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any of the chains, or penguin.org.
Okay, check that out, folks. What is it about Scotland, David? Andrew Carnegie is one of a number of great American success stories that originated in Scotland. One that comes immediately to mind is more of a 20th century success story, and that's Mr. Forbes, Steve Forbes' grandfather.
Yeah,
and he was a Scot immigrant who came here with nothing, very similar to Andrew Carnegie. Who else was from Scotland? Wasn't Rockefeller from Scotland originally?
Well, Rockefeller's not quite, but way back in the family, there are a lot of Scotch Irish too, Scotsmen who spend a couple generations in Ireland.
Is there an Adam Smith connection there somehow?
Isn't that interesting? You know, I think so. I think so. But I think more importantly is that Scotland's one of the places where you don't succeed if you come right off the farm into a big industrial city. And what happens is Scotland is an intermediate zone because most of the people who come over here and do well grew up in towns or cities in Scotland. And they understood the way small business works. These are all small businessmen.
And they're known for their thriftiness, too, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they come over here, they understand trade. They understand you don't produce for yourself. They understand you don't produce just for your hometown. They understand what the market means. They're all literate, well-educated. They know their numbers. They know their figures. They know their letters. They're ready to move. The other thing that they do is they support one another.
Yeah.
They provide small communities for one another, and they give one another a leg up as they move on. Carnegie was very helpful. He was helpful to other Scotsmen. And he was helped along the way by his fellow Scotsmen.
One of the things that one of the most important things that I got out of your book for me and for our audience, our small business audience, David, was one of his fundamental principles of operating his business, and that was to put as much of the profits as possible back into the business, grow the business that way. And much to the chagrin of some of his investors, I think, and that's something that small business owners, the best small business owners in America, do that.
Yeah, he didn't want to take profits out. He understood, as no one else understood, the importance of what today we would call R&D, research and development. So he put money in. He was never satisfied. If he had a great year. He had a great year. He was looking to the next year to be even greater. But more than that, he understood, like nobody else, that there are going to be ups and downs. There are going to be cycles. That you're not going to have every year a good year, and that you've got to put away money for that bad year. He also understood that when times are bad, that's when you move forward. That's when you expand, because it's cheaper to expand. That's when you buy out your competition. You don't hang your head and cry, you know, woe is me. You move forward.
Right. What is it about all these rich guys who think that they can affect world global politics? He was the same way, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was absolutely the same way.
He thought he could create peace just because he was so wealthy.
Well, he spent the last 20 years of his life trying to stop World War One, which he knew was coming.
And so did Ford.
So did Ford. Well, yeah. he figured that all the skills, that because he was so successful in business, he understood the way the world worked. And if he understood the way the world worked, he could understand how to affect politics the same way and be successful there. He never ran for office, couldn't run for office because he wasn't born.
Right.
I mean, he couldn't
right.
be president. He wasn't born
right.
in this country.
Yeah.
But he made friends and influential friends with every Republican leader in Washington, in Pennsylvania, and in New
York.
But
not the Democrats?
No, he was a Republican. He was a stone-cold, you know, committed Republican.
He believed in trade, free trade and the markets. There you go. Hey, David, thanks for being here. Good job today.
My pleasure.
We enjoyed our visit very much. The book is called Andrew Carnegie. The author's name is David Nassau, NASAW, available wherever books are sold, and out today in paperback. quick break. Right back with Richard DeCaeser. Stay with me.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.